Welcome back to the deep dive. I'm just incredibly fascinated by the stack of sources we are looking at today.
Oh, it's a monumental drop of information, truly.
It really is. We just got our hands on this massive, comprehensive set of notes, research papers, and articles detailing what the industry is actually already calling Tekken Night.
Right, or if you read the policy papers, they're using a slightly more dramatic title.
Yeah, Silicon and Statecraft Night.
Exactly.
It is March 4, 2026, and a series of just profound hardware breakthroughs have essentially dropped all at the exact same time.
Which is unheard of.
Right. So our mission today for this deep dive is to unpack these leaps in technology. But more importantly, we are going to explore how these innovations are violently colliding with global politics.
And military defense.
Yes, and the very real corporate security challenges that you might be dealing with at your own job.
It touches everything.
It does. So whether you are, prepping for a tech strategy meeting, or you're just trying to figure out if you should buy a new laptop this week,
Always a tough call.
or if you are just wildly curious about the future, this deep dive is going to connect the dots. We're connecting the device sitting in your pocket right now directly to the geopolitical chessboard.
It is a phenomenal stack of sources to go through. And I think to really frame the big picture here, we need to step back and understand the historical context.
Okay, set the stage for us.
For decades, our entire relationship with technology has been dictated by one thing, and that's a hardware bottleneck.
Right, the physical limits.
Exactly. Everything was limited by how fast a physical chip could compute or how efficiently it could manage thermal
Just
dynamics.
keeping the thing from melting.
Right. Or how long a battery could hold a charge before just dying on you. We dreamed up these incredible software concepts for years, but the physical reality of the hardware constantly held us back.
It was the anchor.
It was. But the core takeaway from our deep dive today, the absolute central theme, is that as of this week, that hardware bottleneck has officially vanished.
It's gone.
We have crossed the threshold. And what's fascinating here is that the new limits aren't made of silicon or lithium anymore.
Right, which is wild to think about.
The new limits are entirely human. We are looking at a frontier defined by ethics, global policy, and statecraft.
The tech is ready, but the real question is, are we? Okay,
Exactly.
let's unpack this. And I want to start with the consumer tech earthquake that just hit because it's the most relatable. Apple has officially unveiled the new M5 chip.
A massive leap.
Huge. Now, the big headline here from the sources is the absolute death of the monolithic era. Apple has officially killed monolithic silicon.
Which was the standard for so long.
Right. For those who don't know, that was the traditional manufacturing method where the CPU, the graphics, the memory, which is carved into one giant single piece of silicon.
Which is incredibly hard to manufacture without defect.
Exactly. So instead, they have fully committed to a 2-nanometer node chiplet strategy.
Chiplets are the future.
They are printing smaller, highly specialized chips and literally stitching them together. And the performance metrics we are seeing in these nodes are just wild. They've introduced this thing called the supercoarse pipeline.
The buffer numbers on that are
Yeah.
staggering.
Yeah. The specific stat that jumped out at me was the 600 entry reorder buffer. That is a 30% larger buffer than the last generation, and it translates to a solid 20% gain in instructions per clock or IPC.
Which sounds very technical.
It does. It does. So to put that in perspective for you, imagine an incredibly busy, hyper-efficient kitchen at a top-tier restaurant.
Oh, I like this analogy. Let's walk through it.
Okay, so in the old monolithic era, the
Who
chef,
is the processor in this scenario?
right, the chef is the processor. The chef is incredibly fast, but they can only look at maybe a dozen arriving order tickets at a time. They get an order for a salad, they prep the greens, they get an order for a steak, they heat the pan.
It's fast, but it is entirely linear, one by
Yeah,
one.
precisely. But this new 600 entry reorder buffer means the chef can look at 600 arriving orders all at the exact same time before a single pan is even placed on the stove.
So the system can anticipate the workload.
Yes, the system looks at all 600 tickets and realizes, wait, 50 of these orders require diced onions. So instead of dicing onions 50 separate times throughout the dinner rush, the chef preps all the onions at once.
Perfectly optimizing the entire kitchen workflow in advance.
Exactly. It eliminates all the wasted movement. That is exactly what the M5 is doing with your data.
It is predicting and optimizing the workflow before the compute even happens. But to really understand the so what behind this leap, we have to look at the plumbing.
The interconnects.
Right, the plumbing that connects these new chiplets together. The sources detail Apple's new HBM4 integration.
High bandwidth memory.
Yes. And the specific architecture they are using is an HBM lithography and in-package interconnect.
Which, again, sounds like a whole lot of engineering jargon. What does that actually mean for the architecture of the chip?
It means they are literally printing the memory directly onto the exact same substrate as the compute cores. They were eliminating the physical distance the data has to travel.
Just bringing it all under one roof.
Exactly. By stitching the memory directly into the package with the chiplets, they are achieving a staggering 64% increase in memory bandwidth.
Wow.
Going back to your restaurant analogy, if the processor is that hyper-efficient chef, memory bandwidth is the size of the kitchen doors leading out to the dining room.
Oh, I see.
You can cook 1,000 meals a minute. But if you only have one tiny swinging door for the waiters to use, the whole system gridlocks.
Yeah.
Apple just took down the wall and opened up a massive multi-lane delivery highway.
So what does this actually mean for you, the person using the device? It literally turns a standard, incredibly thin MacBook Air into a pocket workstation.
It's desktop power in a razor-thin chassis.
Right. And here is where it gets really interesting. Apple hasn't just sped things up. They have fundamentally redesigned how the system thinks about AI.
This is the real game changer.
In the past, you had a single neural engine dedicated to handling all the AI tasks. Now, they've shifted to completely decentralized NPU clusters.
Neural processing units.
Right, distributed across every single logic block on the system.
Which is a monumental shift in how we interact with artificial intelligence. By decentralizing those neural processing units, the workload is distributed, and critically, the heat is distributed.
That's why it doesn't melt your lap.
Exactly. AI is no longer this separate heavy application you have to open. It is running at the OS level natively. This means you could be sitting in a coffee shop running massive billion parameter local AI models directly on your laptop.
Entirely offline.
Entirely offline, without the machine breaking a sweat or even spinning up a fan. We are moving away from the industry's long obsession with chasing raw peak compute power in the cloud.
The cloud bottleneck.
Right. We're shifting toward always on edge AI. And because the chiplet architecture and those distributed NPU clusters are so phenomenally efficient, you are getting an extra 4 hours of battery life while running these incredibly heavy models.
It's just magic. Taking that idea of power efficiency without thermal issues a step further, let's pivot and look at what is happening on the roads. Because the consumer tech world just got totally upended by the transportation sector.
The BYD announcement.
Yes. BYD just announced their Blade EV Platform 2.0. And the headline spec here, what they are literally calling the 5-minute miracle, is a sub-5-minute charge time for a 500-mile range.
That number feels almost like a typo in the research notes when you first read it.
I had to read it 3 times.
5 minutes for 500 miles fundamentally alters the entire mobility landscape.
It really does. But the science in these notes backs it up entirely. BYD is using a new nano LFP chemistry.
Lithium iron phosphate.
Yes, but on a nanoscale combined with a cell-to-body architecture. Now, traditionally, LFP batteries are heavier and less energy-dense than other chemistries.
They were the budget option, usually.
Right. But by using the cell-to-body design, the battery isn't just a heavy box bolted into the floor of the car anymore. It is structurally integrated into the actual load-bearing frame of the vehicle itself.
It becomes the chassis.
Yes. And this allows for a 30% jump in energy density, bringing it to 260 watt-hours per kilogram. But honestly, the longevity specs on this Gen 2 Blade battery are what really stand out to me.
The cycle life is incredible.
They are rating this battery for 4,000 charge cycles. If you do the math on a 500-mile range, 4,000 cycles is the equivalent of about 1.2 million miles.
The implications of that are profound. The battery will significantly outlast the physical chassis of the car itself.
The seats will rot away before the battery dies.
Exactly. We are looking at a future where a secondary market emerges, specifically for harvesting these batteries.
Yeah.
You could theoretically move that exact same battery into your next two vehicles.
Or wire it up to your house.
Right. Use it to power your home for decades after the car is scrapped.
And the charging speed is what makes it actually practical for everyday use. The peak charge rate is listed at 6C.
Let's explain that one.
Yeah. For those who don't spend their weekends reading battery engineering forums, the C rate is just a measure of the rate at which a battery is charged relative to its maximum capacity. A 1C rate means the battery fully charges in 1 hour.
So a 6C rate means it can absorb power 6 times that fast.
Exactly. That translates to taking the battery from a 10% charge to an 80% charge in exactly 4.8 minutes.
Right.
Oh, and because of the specific nano LFP chemistry they developed, there is zero thermal runaway.
That's the safety aspect.
Yeah. Even if the battery cell is severely punctured in a massive highway collision, it won't catch fire. It is incredibly safe.
What's fascinating here is not just the chemistry, though. It's the psychology.
How so?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of consumer behavior, the primary barrier to widespread electric vehicle adoption hasn't actually been environmental consciousness or even the initial sticker price.
It's been range anxiety.
It's human impatience. It is that psychological barrier of dreading, sitting at a charging station for 45 minutes on a family road trip with screaming kids in the back.
Nobody wants to do that.
Exactly. By bringing the charging time down to 4.8 minutes, BYD has reduced the process to the exact length of a traditional gas station visit.
You pull over, you plug in.
You walk inside to buy a coffee, use the restroom, and by the time you walk back out, you have another 500 miles of range. They have entirely neutralized the core psychological friction for the consumer.
So the physical hardware problem is solved. It was just a matter of catering to human habits.
Precisely.
It changes the entire calculus of buying a vehicle. Now, while BYD is removing barriers for consumers, our next source outlines a very profound barrier that just got erected in the defense sector.
This is a heavy one.
It is. The notes detail exactly what happens when the deeply held ethical frameworks of Silicon Valley collide directly with the procurement needs of the Department of Defense.
And this is where the narrative shifts from hardware engineering directly into statecraft.
Now, setting the scene here. We want to be strictly impartial. We are not taking sides on this issue. We are simply reporting the fascinating friction outlined in the source material.
Absolutely. Just looking at the facts on the ground.
Right. So on February 28th, 2026, the U.S. Secretary of Defense officially designated the AI company Anthropic as a non-compliant vendor for Project Maven.
A huge designation.
For some context, Project Maven is the military's flagship artificial intelligence system. It's used for analyzing satellite imagery, identifying targets, and processing battlefield telemetry.
To understand this collision, we really have to break down the two distinct operational realities at play here.
Let's hear the Anthropic side first.
On one side, you have Anthropic. Their entire corporate identity and product architecture is built on what they call constitutional AI. Their models, specifically the Claude 3.5 model mentioned in these defense sources, are rigorously trained to adhere to strict do-no-harm principles.
And it's not just a suggestion.
No, this isn't a surface-level filter or a policy guideline written in the terms of service document. It is hard-coded into the actual weights and the reinforcement learning of the system itself.
It's baked in.
Exactly. So when the Department of Defense requested that Claude 3.5 process telemetry data from autonomous weapons systems, Anthropic categorically refused. They drew a hard ethical line, stating their underlying architecture simply could not be used to facilitate or optimize lethal autonomous actions.
Okay, and then on the other side, you have the Pentagon's operational perspective. The Department of Defense requires absolute reliability and compliance from their intelligence pipelines.
They are dealing with national security.
Right. They are managing real-time global threats. They cannot have a decentralized AI system suddenly refuse to analyze satellite imagery of an incoming threat because the AI's internal weights calculate that the analysis might indirectly lead to a kinetic conflict.
It creates an unacceptable vulnerability for them.
The DoD argues that they need uninterrupted, fully compliant systems to function. And because of Anthropic's hard-coded refusal, the Pentagon has now been forced to pivot their entire procurement strategy. They're relying entirely on OpenAI and Palantir to fill these critical infrastructure gaps.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights the exact premise of Tekin Knight. The limitation for the United States military right now is not the capability of the physical hardware.
It's not about chips anymore.
And it's not the mathematical sophistication of the AI either. Anthropic's model is more than capable of processing the telemetry. The real bottleneck in military procurement and global defense is the clash of moral frameworks.
Human rules.
Yes. You have Silicon Valley's deeply ingrained ethical charters running headfirst into the cold, pragmatic, geopolitical realities of national defense. This raises a really important question for the coming decade.
Which is,
as artificial intelligence becomes as fundamental to a nation's defense infrastructure as steel or aviation fuel, who gets to decide the rules of engagement? Are these policies dictated by elected governments, or are they quietly being set by the board of directors and software engineers at private tech companies?
It is a profound philosophical dilemma, and it is actively shaping billion-dollar defense contracts in real time. But this tension between powerful AI and strict operational rules isn't just happening at the Pentagon.
No, it's hitting the corporate world, too.
There is a totally different kind of security crisis happening in everyday corporate America, which brings us to the infrastructure side of the equation. Okay, let's unpack NVIDIA's new Vera platform.
The hardware beast.
This is the successor to their highly successful H200 AI chip, and the specs here are just staggering. Each Vera chip packs 512 gigabytes of HBM4 memory.
Incredible.
The interconnect speeds, which is how fast these chips talk to each other in a massive server rack, are hitting 1.8 terabytes per second. To visualize that, it's like transferring the entire Netflix 4K streaming catalog between chips in a fraction of a single second.
And doing it without melting the data center.
Right. They are managing the heat with a new fluid channel cooling system that makes the entire platform 15% cheaper to run and 30% more power efficient than the previous generation.
NVIDIA's dominance in this space is absolute. They have built an unassailable moat around their business model. They don't just sell the raw computing power anymore.
They sell the whole ecosystem.
They control the compute, the memory architecture, the cooling systems, and the data plumbing that connects it all together. If you are building an enterprise data center in 2026, NVIDIA is essentially the landlord.
So if the hardware is this perfectly optimized and the data centers are this incredibly powerful, what's broken? Why are enterprise companies struggling so hard to actually deploy generative AI to their employees?
It's a software and permissions issue.
Right. That brings us to a massive software move detailed in the notes. ServiceNow's $1.2 billion acquisition of a company called Vaso. And to understand why a company would spend over $1 billion on security software, let's put you, the listener, into a very real-world workplace scenario.
Everyone can relate to this one.
We've all had that moment of sheer panic before hitting screen share on a Zoom call, terrified you might accidentally have an executive salary spreadsheet open on your desktop.
The worst feeling.
Now, imagine an AI doing that at scale. You open your company's internal AI assistant and ask it to summarize our quarterly financial risks. The AI is incredibly smart. It has read every single document on the company servers, and it generates a brilliant, highly detailed summary.
But there's a catch.
Exactly. How does the AI know if you, a mid-level manager, have the security clearance to read the CEO's highly confidential emails about an impending merger?
That is the core of the problem. Traditional corporate security relies on role-based access control, or RBAC. It acts like a bouncer at a door.
You're on the list or you aren't.
Right. You either have the password to open a specific file or you don't. But generative AI doesn't just retrieve files, it synthesizes thoughts. It might read 1,000 different files, extract insights from all of them, and write a brand new paragraph.
And if one of those files was restricted,
traditional security doesn't know how to redact just the resulting synthesized thought. The AI itself doesn't understand corporate hierarchy. It just sees a vast ocean of data. And in an enterprise environment, that is a catastrophic compliance nightmare waiting to happen.
If the AI accidentally hallucinates or synthesizes highly confidential HR data or unreleased financial earnings and just presents it to an intern who asks a simple question,
the company is facing SEC violations
and massive lawsuits. This is exactly the problem Vaso solves. Vaso developed what they call secure graph technology.
And what secure graph technology does is shift security from file-level passwords to fine-grained node-level access permissions.
How does that work in practice?
Before the AI even begins to process your prompt or synthesize a response, the Vaso software instantly checks your specific human credentials against every single node of data the AI wants to draw from.
It intercepts the thought process.
Yes. It maps the complex relationships between the user, the data points, and the corporate compliance rules in real time. It ensures the AI only uses, and critically, only even perceives, data that the specific human user is explicitly authorized to view.
It is the ultimate gatekeeper for synthesized thought. ServiceNow buying Vaso for $1.2 billion proves that the enterprise world realized raw AI intelligence is completely useless.
It's a liability.
It's a massive liability if you can't tightly control the access permissions. It solves the headache of deploying generative AI without breaching internal security protocols. So again, the hardware is solved. It's the human rules, the permissions, and the compliance that require the innovation.
We keep coming back to that theme.
taking that idea of perfectly optimized AI systems and pushing it to its absolute logical extreme brings us to our final source today. What happens when you take these systems out of the data center and put them absolutely everywhere?
The ambient era.
We are talking about Samsung's new ambient AI initiative. The scale of this deployment is just hard to wrap your head around. Samsung is embedding Google Gemini, highly advanced AI model, into 300 million devices every single year.
300 million.
Every year. We are not just talking about the new Galaxy phones here. We are talking about the smart TVs, the washing machines, and yes, the refrigerators.
And they are powering this massive deployment with the new Exynos 2600 chip. The architecture notes specify this uses a hybrid design built on a 2-nanometer GAFET node.
Okay, let's define GAFET, because that acronym does a lot of heavy lifting in these notes.
It stands for Gate All-Around Field Effect Transistor.
Okay.
Essentially, transistors are microscopic switches that turn current on and off. As we make these transistors incredibly small down to 2 nanometers, they tend to leak electrical current.
Which creates heat.
Right, unwanted heat, and it drains power. GAFET solves this by wrapping the control gate completely around the silicon channel on all 4 sides.
So it contains it.
Virtually zero power leaks out. It is astonishingly power efficient, and it is exactly what allows Samsung to put serious AI-grade compute power into a household appliance that traditionally just needed a simple microcontroller.
I have to push back a bit on the Samsung brief, though. When I first read it, I honestly rolled my eyes. I mean, I don't need my refrigerator to write poetry using Google Gemini. Isn't this just tech for tech's sake?
It's easy to dismiss it as a gimmick when you look at an individual appliance in isolation, but you have to consider the broader strategy.
Okay.
Samsung's deployment proves that the edge isn't just a powerful laptop in your backpack anymore. By integrating this level of AI deeply into the software ecosystem of mundane household appliances, Samsung is quietly creating the world's largest ambient AI network.
Ah, the network effect.
It is a 300 million node swarm deployed every 12 months. Your TV isn't just a screen. It's a sensor and a processing node. Your fridge isn't just cooling food. It's tracking energy usage patterns across the grid.
Communicating with the house.
Right, talking with the HVAC system and optimizing the thermal efficiency of the entire house. This is the realization of the smart home, not as a collection of disjointed gadgets you control with an app on your phone, but as a cohesive, invisible intelligence.
It is an ambient web of intelligence running silently in the background of your life, which really brings us to the core aha moment of this entire deep dive.
The synthesis of it all.
If we look at the architect's verdict on all these intersecting sources, the message is undeniable. March 4, 2026 was the night the hardware constraints officially died. From Apple's 2-nanometer chiplets giving us pocket workstations, to BYD's 5-minute battery charging, neutralizing our own psychological impatience.
The physical technology has fundamentally arrived.
It's here.
It has. The synthesis of all this information points to a completely new era. The future is no longer about engineers struggling to find raw compute power or battery efficiency.
We have enough power.
The compute power is abundant. AI is now deeply embedded in everything from centralized military data centers to the appliances in our kitchens. The new frontier, and frankly the new battleground, is statecraft.
Statecraft and policy.
It is policy. It is ethics. It's about who controls the data pipelines, who sets the moral guardrails for global defense platforms, and how we manage security and permissions when every single device around us is hyperintelligent. The hardware gave us the keys to the future, but humanity has to figure out how to safely drive the car.
It's no longer a math problem, it's a human problem.
Absolutely. And I want to leave you, the listener, with a final, somewhat provocative thought to mull over as you go about your day.
Let's hear it.
We've talked extensively about how powerful and efficient these individual devices have become. If your laptop, your electric vehicle, your phone, and even your home appliances now all possess the hardware capabilities to run massive billion-parameter AI models locally,
entirely without needing to connect to a centralized cloud.
Exactly. What happens when these devices start privately negotiating with each other?
Oh, wow.
What happens when your car and your house start collaborating and sharing localized data directly in the background to optimize your life without ever asking your permission or pinging a central server?
That's entirely possible now.
Are we prepared for an invisible, completely decentralized AI society operating autonomously in our own kitchens and driveways.
That is a wild, wild thought to leave on. An entire society of machines just quietly collaborating in the background of our lives. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It is an absolutely fascinating time to be watching this space. Take these insights into your next strategy meeting. Keep an eye on how these technologies are quietly showing up in your daily life. And as always, keep questioning the world around you. We'll catch you next time.